This is the Frogcast.
We are excited to have a special guest here with us tonight to fire things off. Not only do we have Trey Fallon and Daniel Southern, who are with us every week, and I'm Jeff Mitchell, we are excited to have Travis Brown from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, who is as close to the football program as anybody out there that writes about TCU. So, Travis, we're excited to have you here with us tonight. Just take a second and say hello to everybody that listens in.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm excited to be on here, talk a little bit of TCU football. It's been a pretty exciting season so far.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
No problem. Enjoy it.
Travis, you know, you mentioned it's been an exciting season for the Frogs. Just, you know, they're sitting at 8-0. Just kind of what's your overall thoughts on what you've seen so far?
It's interesting because I think with how the season started, I think everybody who had been following the program, watching the program, fans and whatnot, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think after a lot of these guys kind of started falling, especially on the defensive side of the ball, expectations were adjusted a little bit. And I think instead of thinking that an undefeated season was something that was unattainable and there would be a slip up along the way that could happen, I think it's just kind of taking that sigh of relief as the team has gotten through each game. And I think this past West Virginia game has been the first one where the sigh of relief maybe came earlier than the final buzzer. And so it's been interesting to see how this young team, this young defense has developed into a team that might be good enough to win the Big 12, to make some rumblings, to kind of carry on that perception that the team had before the season began. It's been a real interesting case study to see, maybe even more so about the coaching staff than necessarily the players and the young players that have stepped up and been that next man in. So it's definitely been an interesting case study to kind of follow that player development that this coaching staff has.
November, you know, kind of marks the beginning of the, you know, proving point for TCU on the season. The tough games coming up, you know, the march towards the playoffs. First up is Oklahoma State. They're coming off dropping 70 points on Texas Tech. Frogs going on the road. How do you think TCU stacks up in this one? I mean, I kind of think it's going to be a shootout just like the TCU Texas Tech game kind of was. Are you kind of feeling that same way?
Right. If you know, Patterson has always kind of made a point to segment the season into different little segments. You know, he talked a lot about the four games that ended with Iowa State. That was what they kind of really needed to get through, to get to that bye week, focused on those four games. I think when you look at the last four games that TCU has, let's chop Baylor off and then set it aside for a second, because I think everyone has a notion about what at least that could be. And if you look at the next three games, you can kind of push Kansas aside, because you would think that would be a game that TCU could handle business with fairly easily. So then you have this Oklahoma gauntlet left. And I think, you know, I talked with Kirk Herbstreit before the season began, and he pointed at Oklahoma as that would be the stumbling block for TCU. I agree that Oklahoma is a good team and certainly could be that stumbling block for TCU. But I tend to point to Stillwater to be the one that really you need to circle and look at as the one that could be a tough challenge for TCU. If you look at the history that TCU has had against Oklahoma State since they joined the Big 12, there's something about the way that Mike Gundy game plans that isn't very conducive to the way TCU likes to have success. And I wouldn't say that Gundy has TCU's number at all, but I think that they have typically in the past have had a pretty good game plan against TCU, where that has been that game where if you look back on the season, you could go, hey, TCU was in all of those games except for that Oklahoma State game. That one was a little interesting, you know, last year aside. So I point at this Oklahoma State game that this could be a real true test about where TCU is going into this home stretch, pointed towards that Baylor game to end it all.
Trevon Boykin has been amazing, obviously kind of to highlight him and Dotson, but it seems like everybody's kind of putting him in the second place position or 1B behind Fournette at LSU. Do you think Boykin can win the Heisman? And then also, do you think TCU has to be undefeated for Boykin to win the Heisman this year?
If you were to ask me that before this West Virginia game, I would have said yes, they had to go undefeated. I think Fournette had a significant lead on Boykin. I think I think as they'd gone through the season, he had done what he needed to do for them to win. If I had to just take really this season as a sample size and put all my preconceived notions aside on if I were a Heisman voter, I would give that – I would have, before the West Virginia game, I would have given that nod to Josh Doctson. I think he had been the X factor for TCU so much. Now, that's a little bit of a chicken and an egg argument because you have to get the ball to him and make some of those tough passes and do what you need to do. But Boykin was just lacking that Heisman moment game. He just got the job done. And I think what he did against West Virginia, and I think a little bit – and of course, I'm not going to go out – I've been covering Trevon since he was in high school, and he is a very genuine guy, and he is a very likable guy, and he's a very down-to-earth guy. And I think he, no matter if he was a Heisman candidate or if TCU had lost out the past couple of years, he still would have gone down and talked to that little girl at Iowa State and whatnot. But I think that certainly helped put him on the map a little bit more and make him a little bit more likable for people outside of the TCU sphere. So I think these past two, 3 weeks have been huge for Boykin. I still think if you try to look at what TCU might be able to do for the playoffs, you can't really make that judgment until you see these final four games. These are the important games. I think it's yet to be determined, but I think from here on out, it certainly is a two-horse race between Boykin and Fournette at LSU. I think now, if TCU goes undefeated, I think you got to give the tip of the cap to Boykin, especially if he can run the ball and be as impressive as he was against West Virginia.
You mentioned it a little bit earlier, the TCU defense growing up. You know, if you look at, you know, the last couple games, yeah, they've kind of started slow, giving up some early points to Kansas State and Iowa State, you know, and gave up, you know, first half points to West Virginia as well. But the second halves, you know, have been shutouts the last 2 weeks. And I think, you know, before that it was, you know, so I think it was a total of 17 points in the second halves of their last four games. Do you think this defense can get it done, especially, you know, with these tough games coming up? You've got, you know, P. Ryan at Oklahoma, who's going to probably attack these linebackers. Then you've obviously got the Baylor wide receivers against this, you know, kind of young and experienced secondary learning on the fly. Do you think that they can get it done down the stretch?
I think if they've continued to show the progression that they have been able to demonstrate, there certainly is a good chance. The important thing to note here is before these past two games, it was the first time that Patterson said he's been able to pretty much use his full playbook. He's had to keep it pretty vanilla, keep it pretty basic for these guys to get in. They really weren't even, if I remember correctly, they really weren't even blitzing until the third or fourth game of the season, because they just couldn't insert those packages. They had to get the base coverages down with a lot of these new guys and a lot of guys coming in week by week with the guys that were going down for injury. So I think you can't really start noting the development of these players until these past 2 weeks, because now you can see the full force of what Patterson's defense holds. That being said, if you want to look back at the West Virginia game, that had to be the best game that TCU's defensive line played. They absolutely stopped down the run, and they played pretty good in three quarters against Iowa State against a pretty decent a running back up there. So honestly, the rushing attack isn't as worrisome as the passing attack. I think that's another reason why Oklahoma State is one of those games to circle, putting Baylor aside, of course, because of what they can do throwing the ball around. But I think the opportunity is there. I think that they're going to have to play at or above their current topped out abilities. I'm not saying that they're reaching their potential this season, but whatever their highest caliber of play is now, they're going to have to maintain that through four games, especially the defensive secondary, for that to happen. But it is a possibility. It is a possibility with decent odds.
With all that said, and I know there's a lot of question marks still up there, especially with us not really seeing Stidham at Baylor yet, you know, what he's going to do since they had the bye week. But, you know, I take you to Vegas, give you $1,000, and you have to bet it. I guess you can $500 on question one and question two. I guess question one is, who would you put your money on, TCU, Baylor? And then second question, it's all said and done, who wins the Big 12 this year?
Man, you're coming with the big guns now. I'm gonna start out my question chickening out, and then by the end of it, I'll come up with an answer. Start out my question chickening out, and just saying that for both Baylor and TCU, these next games leading into that game are important because TCU has had a stronger schedule than Baylor. There's not been a lot of games I could have watched Baylor and gone, hey, you know, that might be really the way that they would match up against TCU, because the way the Big 12 is set up this year, I probably, in order to help with that, having no conference champion, they backloaded all the big the successful teams coming from out of last season's games at that back end of the season. So because of that, it's still a little bit hard to read. I still haven't necessarily seen Baylor go up against a strong secondary a strong defense, a defense with five defensive backs. I mean, West Virginia has a little bit of a version of that. So the jury's still out with me a little bit on that. That being said, the way that Baylor has won their games against the competition they have is they haven't faltered. They really haven't faltered, and TCU has faltered. I think if I had to put my money down now, I think TCU and Baylor both go into that game undefeated. I think Baylor wins the game right now, just because I just think that the consistency of they have played that they have had week in and week out against a multitude of different opponents, granted not the best in the Big 12 yet, is just a little bit more consistent. There's been even times when TCU's offense has sputtered a little bit, granted there's been coming in and out. That being said, I think that there's still plenty of time and room in this season for both of these teams to grow and change. I think I've followed Jared Stidham since he was in high school, and the kid's impressive. There's not going to be a drop-off at quarterback. He was developed in Art Briles' system. He knows that the basis of that system before he even got to Baylor, and he's a guy that if it weren't for the fact that they had an older guy that was extremely capable of carrying this Baylor team into the playoffs, he could have had a chance at starting. He probably would have battled for a chance at starting at Tech if he would have gone there instead of flipping to Baylor. I don't think you'll see much of a drop-off with him. That being said, there's, like I said, with TCU's defense the baseline to really start judging what they can be started at West Virginia and a little bit at Iowa State, because that's when they fully could use the full depth of that playbook. So if I had to put the money down now, I would probably put it on Baylor, but I don't think it's a fair judgment of either team yet to see where they can possibly – where they can be in 4 weeks.
Travis, I was just wondering, I wanted to, you know, get some insight, maybe a little, you know, your opinion on a few of the more interesting happenings on the recruiting trail up to this point. I know we have some fantastic guys verbally committed already. I think one guy is going to get announced tomorrow as well. I was just wondering how you feel the recruiting game has been going so far this year. Interesting how, you know, lost a couple guys we thought we were going to get, well, at least within the last year or so. And then I wanted to know how you feel like, how it's going to continue to go going forward.
I think TCU proved something with the success that they have had in starting to really consistently nab what you would glean as these four-star and five-star recruits, most notably quarterback Sean Robinson in the 2017 class. I think that was huge. I mean, there is no way that you say even 3 years ago, even after the Rose Bowl, that TCU pulls in a five-star quarterback, one of the top-rated quarterbacks in the nation, because there was – I mean, that solely comes from the change in offense. That is a quarterback – friendly offense. So I think you're seeing the direct results of that success and seeing that TCU has become not only a national power on the football field, but a national power in that third season, which is the recruiting season and national signing day. I think from what I gleaned so far for this recruiting class that will be coming in, there's lots of versatility. There's lots of athletes. There's lots of guys. There's lots of those guys that even potentially could move to the defensive side of the ball. It's a very seems to me to be a very Patterson friendly, what he likes to see kind of class. Lots of guys who are really just want to be at TCU, and I think that is more important to Patterson and his staff than the amount of stars that any recruiting site could list. He wants guys that are dedicated to being a Horned Frog, because I think it's been proven that guys who play for their team and want to play for their school and that's what it's about, you can really squeeze as much potential and talent out of those guys as possible, as opposed to some of the guys maybe that had some other options, maybe decide this is where they want to be, might get to school and, who knows, regret the decision or might have an attitude where if they're not getting enough touches or if they're not playing the position that they originally thought they might be playing or played in high school, it could become a problem. I think that's really the crux of what the recruiting system is at TCU. You could say this probably about any program or any school, but I would venture to say that more so than a lot of those places, you can't necessarily judge a recruiting class by the ranking Rivals or Scout or 247 or anybody gives, or the number of stars that it comes after any player, because I think that the reason that TCU has risen to become a Big 12 power so fast is not necessarily the most important thing wasn't necessarily a change in offensive coordinators and a change in offensive scheme, but it was the way that they've been able to develop players throughout, even from back in the Mountain West days, taking players that wanted to be at TCU, had some potential, might not have been rated so high, might have had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder because of that, and they can draw every ounce of that potential out of them. I think that that's what's important, and what no matter where TCU finishes this year or any years in the future, that recruiting process isn't going to change.
All right, just one other little tiny thing, kind of related. Maybe you could clear this up for me. I've heard his name pronounced Suo, and I've heard Shewo, and I was wondering if you could clear that up.
Not quite sure on that one.
Okay, dang. All right.
Heard it both ways.
All right.
No, I've asked that too. I saw you asking that on Killer Frogs the other day, Daniel, and I don't think anybody's quite got it right. Maybe you can find a radio station in Houston or Kingwood that covers this game for us.
So. Yeah, because it drives me crazy every time I see it. I'm like, how am I supposed to read this? And then there's his last name too, and I'm not even going to start on that.
Well, Travis, the last question before we let you go. You're around the program as much as anybody. You're there for all of the press availabilities. You run your Periscope that I appreciate and I watch before the press availability.
Thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, I do. I hop on there. I tried to explain it exactly what it was to my wife the other day, and I got about 30 seconds in. She's like, just never mind. I don't want to hear it. But you're around Patterson. How do you compare Coach Patterson's demeanor at this point in the 2015 season versus this point in the 2014 season, when you compare and contrast the expectations, the tension already having lost to Baylor, compared to where we are now in light of what you said, which I think was a pretty accurate summary of the way that expectations got recalibrated, but here we are 8-0 playing with house money going into the depth of the season.
That's an interesting question to raise because I think there's been a pretty immediate change in that lately. I would say heading into the season, the demeanor surrounding the program, and especially with Coach, it was tense. I think that no matter what they might say in the media about, you know, one game at a time, we're not talking about expectations, we just have to win it. I think whether they talked about it or not, I think everyone is feeling the full weight of that expectation and has. And especially – and I think that load got heavier as each and every one of those players started dropping on the defensive side of the ball. And you're just having to plug in the next guy and the next guy and see how that would turn out as kind of a blind gamble. So I would say everybody who's been covering the team would say that things were tense and terse and a little bit strained and stressed with everyone surrounding the program more so than it has the past couple of years. That all being said, with how much Patterson emphasized getting through those four games, getting to that bye week and getting a week and a half of rest heading into that West Virginia game, things changed. In talking with Patterson, with the program, everything leading up to that West Virginia game, it really seemed like just getting to that rest point because they went. They hadn't stopped from fall camp. Most all the teams in the Big 12 had already had a bye week up to that point, and they ran a marathon straight into that point. And I think they were also feeling the weight of that. And it was really interesting to see how much lighter everything surrounding the program seemed leading into that game of West Virginia. And frankly, that might have been a little bit evident in the way that the game turned out, in the way that TCU came out and from start to finish dominated that game. It seemed like there was a weight off of everyone's shoulders in talking about it. Things were loose. You had Patterson, you know, and I mentioned that in a video we posted on the Star Telegram, a preview video. It was a little bit of a joke and a lighthearted segment, but it really kind of had something to do with the football and the fact that Patterson was dropping jokes left and right in the media lunch. And that's something he's done in the past when, you know, things have been smooth sailing and whatnot, but that's not something that really he had done this season. He was very, 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 if anything, extremely focused coming up to this point. And I'm not saying that he's any less focused, but I feel like getting some people some rest, getting some time to grow up some of these inexperienced players and having a full week and a half to do that, getting people into training, they took a lot of time off the field in that. They took like Sunday and Monday off after the Iowa State game. They practiced hard Tuesday and Wednesday, they took Monday and Tuesday off, practiced hard Wednesday and Thursday, had Friday and Saturday off, I believe, and then came back Sunday, practiced kind of light, Monday had off for lab, And then Tuesday and Wednesday heading to the game, we're in shoulder pads – I mean in shorts and helmets. And it was a lot of time off the field, and I feel like that weight was lifted. Things are a lot lighter and looser, and you could possibly draw a correlation between that and the way the team played against West Virginia.
That is great insight from Travis Brown, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We want to thank you so much, Travis, for taking the time to sit down with us and be able to share your thoughts about what you see going on. Just what you shared right there inside of the program, things that Frog fans want to know and that we appreciate you taking the time to share with us. Thank you so much for coming on the Frogcast tonight.
No problem. Enjoyed it, guys. Anytime.
Thanks so much, Travis.
You got it.
Well, that was great to have Travis from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on and give us some insight into the program of what's going on. We want to quickly take a look back. The big win TCU had over West Virginia last Thursday night. It was great to get a home win. It was great to get a convincing win where we weren't having a cardiac attack in the fourth quarter. So, Daniel, you were there at the game. What did you see that you felt good about watching the Horned Frogs beat the Mountaineers?
Well, the offense, scoring 40 points, obviously, you know, it's pretty on point for what we've been doing so far. It sputtered a bit at times, but I think, well, there may be a reason for that. I was impressed. Now, from my viewpoint, I was mentioning this earlier to off the air, I guess. You know, I couldn't really get a good feel for the defense, but apparently, based on what they say now today, that in the last, we've given up 10 points in the last seven quarters, that is amazing to me when you think back to Kansas State, you know, just getting trucked by them and all that. And thinking back, yeah, there was a few times where I was like, okay, this is, you know, turning around. And I don't know. That's just so promising. I mean, I know West Virginia doesn't have the most lights out offense by any means, but considering how crappy the defense has been, that's a significant improvement. So that's the offense didn't surprise me all that much, but the defense coming around so well and handling things, it made it a much more solid game. You know, it wasn't, I guess it's really the first time since maybe since Texas that it wasn't a nail biter at any point. You know, it was pretty, and I like games like that, you know, I like where I can enjoy it and just relax. But anyway, so yeah, the defense coming around is definitely, I guess, the brightest spot that I got from that game.
Yeah, this would definitely be what Coach Patterson would call a Gatorade game, where he just doesn't have to drink water handed to him. He can go over and get a cup of Gatorade. It was nice to have a convincing win with plenty of margin this last Thursday night. Well, it was good to get a win, but we need a win this Saturday. We had mentioned this before we went on air. This game is not getting enough hype, for a lack of a better term, and I think it will over this next week when people actually sit down and look at the games that are coming up. TCU is traveling to Stillwater and taking on the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Both teams are 8-0. Both of them control their own destiny, not only in the Big 12, but in the college football playoff. And so we are going to see two teams, 8-0, late in the season, battling on a big game on national TV at 2:30 on Fox. Trey, what do you see as a few keys to the game for the Frogs to get a big win? And what is, you know, every game is the biggest game of the year so far. This is clearly the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We might have mentioned it on the podcast before, but the road kind of to the Big 12 title goes through Stillwater because they get TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma at home. And I just, you know, like Travis kind of mentioned, this is the jumping off point. This is kind of a proving point game for the Frogs, facing off, you know, if you saw the Texas Tech and Oklahoma State game, it was somewhat similar to, you know, the TCU Tech game, as it was, you know, an offensive shootout kind of back and forth. Oklahoma State, you know, pulled ahead late, you know, kind of fourth quarter, late third, fourth quarter. But Oklahoma State, they're dangerous. I think, you know, when we talked to Travis earlier, I mentioned that I think this is going to be another shootout. I don't know. Oklahoma State, James Washington, their receiver, he's really good. He went for 200 yards and 2 touchdowns against Tech, and he's having a good season. I don't know. It's just it's hard. You know, TCU's never really played that well in Stillwater since joining the Big 12. So this game makes me nervous, and I'm like you. I don't understand why it's not getting more hype. I guess that we all kind of thought maybe there was a slim chance that game day would go there, but with Alabama, LSU, I guess those were, pipe dreams, really. But
it's in the ESPN bylaws. They have to Tuscaloosa 3 times a year.
Right. So, but, I'm really looking forward to this one. I think, both defenses, are similar, not great, not they're not Kansas, but they're not, great either. So I think it's going to be a true test, and I don't know. I'm real iffy on this one because I don't know. It leaves me shaking my head right now because I just think it's going to be a really close, stressful game, and it could come out either way. I think the line came out and TCU was favored by 5, and to me that sounds kind of about right.
Yeah, you look at the two quarterbacks that they have for Oklahoma State. They have Mason Rudolph, who finished the year strong for them last year, winning their bowl game over Washington, of course, winning the Bedlam game to get him into the bowl. And he has looked good this year. But even when he hasn't looked good or when they've tried to change the offense up, people forget, J.W. Walsh is coming in off the bench to give them a spark, who is maybe, aside from Boykin, the most mobile quarterback in the Big 12, and his ability to extend plays with his legs, his ability to be a leader. I mean, he's just a leader on top of being a quarterback. That scares me to death, man. My goodness, does that scare me to death. They don't have the wideouts like they've had in the past. They don't have, Des Bryant. They don't have Justin Blackmon. They don't have the stars on the edge like they've had, but they've got leadership, and they have a really good coach, and they have a place that we haven't won in over 20 years. So, yeah, this game scares me to death, officially. And so I am interested to see what we're going to be able to do. I think to be able to win this game, obviously, it's the Big 12. We have to have a shootout, and we have to score every time we get the ball. The goal is to get in the end zone, beyond the cliche of that. Like, that's what we have to do. But I also think our defense has got the continued development and gelling of our defense has to, escalate during this period. We got a couple extra days, hopefully, to rest up as well as to get some extra teaching in. And whatever we need on the defensive side, man, we can't pray that into being fast enough. We have got to have those defensive backs be ready to go, because I think they're going to throw it down the field, and Mason Rudolph will do that. Anything else you guys see from the Oklahoma State game that's coming up that you think we need to spend some time on?
I'm just not sure about it anymore because, all season long they've looked pretty good and they haven't lost, and a lot of the preseason, they had a lot of preseason hype. And then just, yesterday, Tech nearly beat them, at least for a lot of that game. It looked like Tech was going to win. And so then I was thinking, it was in Lubbock, but so I'm not completely sold that they're just going to be lights out, even though it is in Stillwater. So I don't know. My opinion has just kind of wavered as time's gone on, so I'm really not sure which way I feel like this is going to go.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of played a lot of close games, actually, kind of similar to TCU, but, squeaked one out against Texas by 3 points, squeaked one out against Kansas State by 2 points, went to overtime with West Virginia. So, yeah, they're a weird team. And, I mean, even they only beat Central Michigan in their first game by 11 points, so it's weird to see. I mean, it is weird with this whole Big 12 thing because all of the good teams have yet to play, so it's still so hard to compare and contrast because it's kind of like the top teams really haven't been truly tested that much. So it's interesting, definitely interesting.
Yeah, we basically have a round robin in November. I think I've mentioned this, of TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. And, only one of them is going to be standing at the end. I don't know if anybody's going to be undefeated. But, yeah, none of the best four teams have played each other. And it's gonna be an interesting month of November. You highlighted that Tech got beat by Oklahoma State. Man, have they kind of fallen off here since they played us? I mean, they got beat by Baylor. They did not play very well against Kansas. Of course, they got beat by Oklahoma, and then of course got beat by Oklahoma State. I kind of had high hopes for them for going 9-3 or 10-2, and that's just not the case. I think things are catching up with Coach Burrow out there in Lubbock. I think we got their best shot all season. So, yeah, we all know what we think of Tech fans. So. We want to take a second here because Tuesday night, if you're listening to this before Tuesday, we are going to have the first announcement of the rankings from the College Football Playoff meeting out there in Grapevine, Texas. They are putting together their first ranking, and we all know we don't have to give the asterisk to it. These don't mean anything. You can win by 50 and still drop three spots, but people are going to obsess in them. Message boards are going to go crazy about them, and hell, we're going to talk about them. And so when we look at what the selection committee is going to release on Tuesday night, if you guys had to give your best hunch off the top of your head of who the top four are going to be, not just what you want, but who you think the selection committee's top four is going to be from what we know of their criteria from the year before, where do you guys see the top four coming out from the selection committee Tuesday night?
Well, I think most would agree. I feel like y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, that it's probably going to be Clemson or LSU at one. I don't think Ohio State gets the number one spot. And then my guess is Clemson one, LSU two. I'm going to go TCU three, and Michigan State four, I think, is kind of what I'm thinking. Alabama might sneak in there. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at. Maybe Iowa. I don't know.
Yeah. Daniel, who do you think the top four are going to be from the committee?
That's pretty much what I was going with, you know, based on the whole who you've played up to that point, you know, angle that they go with. So Yeah, they'll probably have Clemson at one, LSU at two. I think TCU will be in there. I don't know if it'll be three or four. But I want to say because they beat Michigan, that Michigan State would be in there. It's so hard to guess what they're going to do. But it's going to be some. It's not going to be like what we've been seeing in the AP and the coaches polled at all. But it'll be a little different, but it'll probably be, I feel like, something how what I've said and what Trey said.
Yeah, I think it'll be refreshing because I remember last year's first poll or the second poll, they had three of the four teams were from the SEC West, and we just knew that wasn't going to happen. But somewhere I read scrolling through Twitter that at this point last year there were two undefeated teams, and now there's 11 undefeated teams still. And so that's a heck of a lot of a sample size to pool to draw from. So almost identical to you guys. I'm going to go Clemson one. They have that win over Notre Dame that looks really good right now. I'm going to go LSU number two. I think I'm going to go TCU number three because I think if there's a lot of coaches on there, they're going to respect those road wins that we have. And I think number four is going to be Michigan State. I think it's going to be Michigan State because they did beat Michigan. They still beat Oregon, who is not much, but it's better than anybody Ohio State's beat, who I think is the other team that's going to be jonesing for competition into the top five. And Bama will probably be six because it's just required. So Bama will probably be six. But I think the Frogs fans will probably be pleasantly surprised to see that we are going to be in the top four of the committee. That doesn't mean we get to stay there, but I think it's nice to be able to – I think that's what we're going to see.
My thing with the rankings this year is last year, you know, is the first year of the playoffs. So every Tuesday, once they started putting out these stupid ass rankings, I would rush home from work because I think it's at six o'clock is when they do it, I think. So I'd rush home from work, flip on the TV, get pumped about watching these things, and then listen to all the talking heads talk about it. But forget all that shit. I'm not doing that this year. I will look up the results on Twitter or, you know, I'll eventually see them somewhere. So that's just kind of how I feel about them this year. Like till that last one, like this shit pisses me off. Like they do it just for pure for TV ratings. Like, and it's so annoying. Like it's so annoying. I think like why, like if you don't even if you want to say we'll just release two, like the last one and then the week before or something, like I can give you two, but like to do it this early, it's so stupid. I mean, like you said, there's still 11 undefeated, which is going to sort itself out. They all kind of play each other. A lot of them do, but it's like, damn, I hate these things.
It's so, I remember when we got moved to number three and when that last year, when that came out, it was like, ha, number three, suck it, Baylor and all that. But I guess because we had been so used to how the polling worked throughout the BCS and all that, you know, it's kind of like as long as wherever you're ranked, as long as you win, you pretty much stay there. And then we go out and win by 50 whatever points and then drop down to six on the last week. And they were like, oh, yeah, this is how we do it. And it was like, that's a bunch of crap. So I'm not going to watch it either. I don't know if I'll even – I don't think I'm going to actively even seek out to see what kind of crap they came up with. Maybe if I stumble upon it accidentally, whatever. But I don't like it either.
No, I just wish that when they moved us up to number three, they really should just put an asterisk and said you've been mathematically eliminated from the playoff. Because that's basically is their argument was if these teams in front of you win, which they're going to, you're not going to make it. Yeah, that was such garbage. I'm with you, Trey. I'm not going to come. I came racing home as well, you know, flip it on ESPN. You know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to cut my work short to come home and listen to Danny Cannell tell us how bad we are. That son of a bitch. Never mind. I mean, I am not going to listen to him badmouth us. I do not need that. I do not need that. Well, on another note here, there are two things I just wanted to highlight. These came to me this morning when I was getting ready for work. I had two things that had been that were on my mind about national college football that I just wanted to share with you. Number one is – what a dumpster fire Nebraska is. I mean, that program is 3-5. They are probably not going to make a bowl game. They fired Bo Pelini, who had always won at least 9 games, and brought in Mike Riley because he's really nice and doesn't cuss. And they are going to finish in the bottom of near the bottom of one of the weakest divisions in all of college football. And I just, you know, if you look at the slide of Nebraska, I know it's easy for us Big 12 homers to say they should come back to the Big 12, but they have not done themselves any favors in their leadership, and they have not done themselves any favors in the Big 10. And so I just wanted to note that their slide has been epic. The only slide I've seen that's touched it, which I think is going to surprise all of us if we would have been asked this question the third weekend of September, SMU has won 1 game this year. SMU is 1-7. They played lights out against Baylor. Then they played lights out against us. And, you know, they played really well against us. And they've won 1 game since there. I cannot believe that those two guys, that the SMU has fallen so far this season. And they might go 2-10. The rest of their schedule, they got some heavyweights. They got Memphis, and they've got Navy, and they've got Houston. And they're going to get the living crap kicked out of them. So I'm really shocked. Perfect.
To go along with your Nebraska thing, because it's funny that you brought that up, because, I mean, I have a couple people I follow on Twitter that are big Nebraska fans, so every week I see their tweets talking about, like you said, how big of a dumpster fire their program is. But also, you know, I'm 30 years old, so I started getting into college football, like, basically real early 90s, kind of around the age of 5, 6, 7, you know, kind of when you start actually remembering and following stuff. But what the hell happened to Colorado? Like, Colorado used to be decent too. Like, they were in the Big 12 championship game a couple years, or at least I know 1 year against Texas. Like, and I feel like they were like kind of perennial, always in the top 25. Like, they've taken a pretty hard fall from grace too.
Oh, they had Rashawn Salaam. That was their high school trophy.
Cordell Stewart. Yeah.
Well, I remember they were in the title game against Texas in 05. Texas won it. And they just got crushed. Like, everybody got crushed by Texas. And they fired their coach and hired that doofus from Boise State, Dan Hawkins. And I think they've had 1 winning season since then. And, yeah, they have just been a total wreck.
Yeah, I don't feel like they – like, I mean, like, their campus is cool. Like, it's in a cool spot. Like, it's fucking a million times better than Waco. Like, I don't feel like there's any excuse, like, not to be able to get some recruits there. You play in the Pac-12. Like,
and it's always 420 up there.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Just buy them a truck, and they'll probably come to your program.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's another program that has disappeared. When they talk about the changes in the Big 12, I bet 9 out of 10 fans couldn't remember that Colorado was in the Big 12. I bet most fans don't know they're in the Pac-12. So, And they have a football program to prove it. Yeah. Well, anybody else we want to pick on that is kind of slidden down the scale here?
How about Texas getting shut out by Iowa State?
Oh, yeah. Oh. That was brutal, too.
That was, I watched that just for fun. I mean, what is that German word, Schadenfreude, where you take delight in the suffering of your enemies? I mean, that
Oh, I do that all the time, yeah.
It's a way of life.
Yeah, yeah. But at the beginning of the season, as crappy as they were, I'm like, well, they'll at least beat Kansas and Iowa State. No question. They just have too big of guys no matter what. I couldn't imagine they'd ever get shut out.
That was embarrassing. I think it reopened. I think Charlie Strong is back on as hot a seat as he was the morning after the TCU game. I really do. I mean, there's
maybe,
zero
maybe
progress.
Worse.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can write off, oh, we got hammered by one of the top five teams in the country. Yeah, they looked awful. They looked awful. You got shut out against Iowa State. How bad? Just to fast forward, we're going to wrap up here. Imagine that TCU and Baylor are both undefeated, and we beat them. And then Baylor gets to finish the season against Texas, and they're just pissed off from getting beat by their rival. How many points will Bryles hang on Texas in that last game? I bet they'll score 90. So, all right, on that note, fellas, yeah, it would be interesting to see. I would be okay with all of those things happening, so... I did sleep over to one of the message boards of Texas, and they were talking about that they we need to fire Strong now and hire Tom Herman right now because everybody else is going to be going after Tom Herman. We might as well get him, and just they couldn't imagine that somebody would turn that job down. So we'll get to see. So I did want to go ahead and put my name out there. The Hawaii job is open, and I will take that for half of whatever Norm Chow was getting paid. So I will volunteer to go 2-10 for $1 million a year and live on the beach. So
I'll do it for $75,000.
Well, guys, I hope we're in this good a mood next week when we sit down to talk about the Oklahoma State game. So, Frog fans, if anybody gets up there, tweet us some pictures online. We would love for you to keep us posted. We'll give everything out on the Twitter account if you're going to be there at the Oklahoma State game. Don't go to Eskimo Joe's. It's overrated. There's other better places to eat. Enjoy your trip to Stillwater.
So overrated, man.
So overrated.
I dated a girl way back in the day that went to Oklahoma State, and we'd go up there and visit her, and we would go to Eskimo Joe's. And it's like everybody talks up like those cheese fries and stuff so big, and it's like so average, like so average.
You know what? I mean, I dated a girl in college that was from Oklahoma City, and we went up there to Oklahoma State because she had family there and went to a game. And we went to Eskimo Joe's. I'm like, this is like a truck stop on a college campus. That's what this food tastes like. You know, it's so over. Everybody and their cousin's got a T-shirt. Everybody goes to Eskimo Joe's. Yeah. Like, come on, man. I mean, the good thing about Old South is you just know it's dirty old food. Nobody pretends like it's 5-star. They think that place is heaven. Oh, man. Well, we want to thank everybody for being here on the Frogcast with us for this extended episode with Travis Brown. And so we hope to take a minute to go online and find us on iTunes, find us on Stitcher, a radio app. You can always find us on Facebook, on the Frogcast, as well as on Twitter at the Frogcast TCU. So for Daniel Southern, for Trey Fallon, for the guest we had, Travis Brown, I am Jeff Mitchell. Thank you for listening to the Frogcast.